a lawyer, a drunk, a whiny man-baby, and a smooth criminal come together to become the defenders on this episode of the Split Screen Podcast. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Split Screen Podcast. It's been missing for a while, but we're all defenders up this weekend. Awesome new show that dropped from Marvel and Netflix. The culmination of the TV MCU, almost, that doesn't refer to the actual MCU because of, you know, money. But today we're just going to review that. We're going to review the new Marvel Netflix series, The Defenders. You can tell it's been a while. And with me, I have a good friend of mine to help us kind of put everything in context. Once again, I'm not as smart. So with me, I've got my buddy James Amatuzio.
Hey, man.
You can say hi now. That's right. Good. Nice. He's a professional, folks.
You know it.
So, all right, man, thank you so much for being here. So, I know you had the weekend. I literally finished the show, like, 10 minutes ago. So, as per usual, we have thoughts.
Yeah, but, I mean, you finished the show after thinking there was, like, four episodes left. Let's not kid ourselves here.
Well, yeah, because, okay, here's what I don't like to do, okay? I hate, especially with the series as I come out always, I hate seeing how many episodes it is if I don't already know it, because then that lets me know what the pacing is going to be like. So I'm always kind of waiting to see it. Like at the halfway point, I'm like, okay, there's a halfway point. I can see what's coming next. So in this case, I was pleasantly surprised, but the other way, because I thought there was a lot more left, but it was only 8 episodes. The other series have been like, what, 13, right?
10 to 13 easily, yeah.
So shut up. Don't blame me for not knowing things.
You'll have 15 minutes left. Come on now.
Yeah, I'm like, man,
so
I got four and a half episodes to go. I'm going to sleep. And then I walk in, and this guy's like, in the morning, and this guy's like, it's only 8 episodes. And I'm like, oh, I have 15 minutes left. I will see you after lunch. So yeah, all right, man. Well, again, thank you so much for being here. I want to get right into it because it's fresh.
Yes.
So first of all, before we do Defenders, I wanna I've never covered the other Netflix shows on this podcast, so this would be a good opportunity to just kind of quick roundup of what I want to know what you thought really quickly of the four other series prior to the Defenders.
Yeah, I mean, Daredevil season one remains pinnacle for me of the way to shoot a superhero fucking TV show. It's just brilliant. It hits all the right notes, has the best fight scenes that I've seen in a long time. That hallway scene is incredible. Ugh, I know.
And I'm surprised. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised we haven't gotten more, like, poor copies of that. Because you know how usually it's like someone does something cool, and then you have this crazy trend of, like, for 3 years, everyone tries to do variations of that exact same thing. I'm surprised we haven't gotten too much of that.
Yeah, you know, like when The Matrix happened and everyone was trying to copy those bullet time,
right,
slow-mo fight
right, exactly.
scenes. But this, for whatever reason, I thought it was going to go the opposite way. When, like, things were coming out, you saw, like, John Wick coming out after that, and it was like, oh, people are really taking their action seriously.
Right.
It clearly wasn't the case.
Some of them.
Yeah, I mean, after that, season two played right into that. It gave a lot of stuff for the Defenders in season two that you really didn't even know was happening, but that introduced the Hand and Elektra.
Now, do you feel though that season two of Daredevil, did you feel that a lot of that was unresolved? I mean, obviously, clearly, a lot of that did play a factor into the Defenders series, but do you feel that that took away from season two of Daredevil because a lot of it was set up?
I think so. It made it seem messy. It seemed like it was all leading towards something, but we weren't good enough to find out what that something was. Like,
why don't you
here's
love
all this
us?
Stuff. Love it. Love it all. But we're not going to do anything with it. Just pause that. Put that on the back burner while we dump these other shows on you first.
Right. And speaking of the other shows, too, I mean, again, I don't want to cut off your pattern. But the other two shows following Daredevil, Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, didn't really play much into this larger story.
No, definitely felt like more like just introducing people to characters that had never seen screen time at all. Just being like, hey, these guys are a thing, and maybe you should get to know them a little bit because they're going to be around for a bit. But it didn't seem to really have much of a point other than it was a good contained story that spoke to who they were as people so that you knew sort of their motives and where they're coming from as like background. But it didn't really seem to do much else other than that. But that being said, really, really good contained stories.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
Like Jessica Jones alone. Holy God.
Yeah.
Anyone who has disagreed with me on that, I just disown as a friend because it's too good. It's too good.
Everyone's going to get James's Twitter handle later, so if you disagree with him, block at him, then block him.
Please block me because I don't want any part of it. I don't need that kind of negativity in my life.
Okay, and then so coming back to the last show prior to the Defenders, Iron Fist. How did you feel, James, about this wonderful, wonderful show?
I feel like this is a loaded question. I finished two episodes of it and turned it off because I can't. Danny Rand.
Take a breath.
He's just awful. Awful. I can't. I mean, there's some good aspects to that show. But as a self-contained series, it was just unfortunate on so many levels.
Yeah, so I mean, and again, and before people start jumping down your throat for not having seen the whole show, I have seen the whole show, and I completely agree wholeheartedly with you. Excuse me, sorry. See, I'm coming down with a cold. But I mean, just recently, too, while I was kind of binging The Defenders, I was, you know, as I do, I was kind of tweeting about it as much as I can without spoilers. And a lot of people asked me, you know, do I need to watch Iron Fist to get this show? And now that I've actually finished it, I can honestly say you really don't. Like, there's nothing that you miss in The Defenders if you skip Iron Fist. And to be honest, even if you skip Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, because like we were talking about, there's nothing in those stories that really connects to The Defenders or Daredevil or even Iron Fist. Jessica Jones and Luke Cage were kind of like these one-off shows where it's like, meet this character for 13 or 10 episodes, and now look at this character here, kind of a thing.
Yeah, they were mainly just those stories, as I was saying, but really the only thing, and I believe I even asked you before I even started Defenders, I'm like, do I need to watch Iron Fist? Mm-hmm. And you were like, nah. No, it's good. You saw Daredevil Season 2, you're fine.
And I kind of told you that without knowing what Defenders was all about.
Yeah.
I'm just like, no. The answer to this question is always no. Do I need to watch it? No. Never. What if someone has a gun? No. Die. That's
Just give up because
make
it's
a peace
worth...
with the world and just get it over with.
It's not worth the 10 plus hours you're going to devote to that show.
And you know what? To kind of, for the sake of posterity and for the sake of fairness, I will say one thing about Iron Fist, which, and this is kind of the nuance where you can have a show be engaging and still bad. For me, I watched Iron Fist a lot quicker than I got through Luke Cage. Luke Cage, as revolutionary and as amazing as it was, it took a lot for me to watch Luke Cage from episode to episode. I finished one episode and it was kind of like, okay, cool. I can kind of go do what I have to do, and when I feel like it, I'm in the mood again, I'll come back to this world. Whereas the rest of the shows, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and including Iron Fist in that, there was some sort of an urgency to go episode to episode. Like, one episode finishes, and you're like, I want to see how this plays out. Like, I'm in a kind of a rush to see what happens next. But at the same time, what happens next was horrible. But you still kind of go, I want to see what happens next. Like, it's kind of like, you know, when you see it, it's the train wreck analogy, right? There's a horrible train, and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. It's the most terrible thing in the world. And you continue to stand there looking because you're like, well, I want to see what happens next. Like, okay, everyone's here. The cleanup crew's here. The cops are here. The ambulance is here. It's all done. Everyone's leaving. Well, yeah, but there's still some stuff happening. I just want to see what happens next. So yeah. That's the only way I can kind of describe Iron Fist. So if you were to rank, James, prior to Defenders, if you want to give me a ranking of the show,
sure.
Because internet and lists, how would you rank the Marvel Netflix series thus far, prior to the Defenders?
I take Daredevil Season 1 up at the top, Jessica Jones, Daredevil season 2, Luke Cage, and then Iron Fist can, you know, just sit in the mud 6 feet under, well, as far as I care.
In a hole of a building.
Cemented, blown up, dropped on them.
Spoilers! Okay, so I was going to say we're going to try to do a spoiler-free review first before we get into the nitty-gritty of the Defenders, but you know what? We won't. So this is going to be a fully spoilerific review of the Defenders. So if you haven't seen the Defenders or even any of the other prior Marvel Netflix collaborations, Daredevil Season 1 and 2, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, or Iron Fist, which you don't need to, then please, please refrain from listening forward. You can always watch the shows, come back, subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, and you always come back and listen to this episode after you're kind of caught up. If you don't care, then let's get into it. Yes. So James, first impressions, Defenders.
Decent.
What are your thoughts?
Decent. I didn't hate it. I didn't, like, I don't think it had the same love that I had for, like, Jessica Jones or Daredevil, but I don't hate it by any means. My first thing that I found, and I think it ties back to how you've sort of found Luke Cage as well, was the first two episodes didn't really have too much of a hook. Like, I didn't have that urgency during the first two episodes to go, I need to push forward. I want to see what happens next. I just was like, you're just setting up everything, which I get you have to do, but it was also just kind of, like, let's get somewhere. Let's actually do something. And it wasn't until, like, episode 3 where I was like, oh, okay, now I see what we're getting towards. I see what the point of this is.
And do you find the point was worth it, though?
The overall payoff?
Mm-hmm.
No, not really. They sort of set up this big bad Sigourney Weaver and then really did not a lot with her.
Yeah.
And then it just sort of, then I don't know, I found the end got muddy. Like, to get into it a little bit deeper than just the overall impression, since you brought up the ending, I don't understand what Elektra's motivation was at the end. Because, you know, there's one point, especially when she's having that fight with Daredevil in the, I don't know, the dragon's bones. she's like, oh, I'm just, why haven't you killed me yet? Oh, I'm doing it for the fun. And then all of a sudden, oh, no, I want you to be by my side while we, like, rule the world. Where did that come from?
Yeah, even the 30 seconds in, we're going to die. So...
Yeah, like...
I'm in complete agreement with you. And again, like I said, I'm fresh off of this minutes in, so I have a lot more questions. But I want to come back to Elektra's motivation. I want to talk about the way this series kind of worked as a whole. And then I want to kind of pick apart the nitty gritty of it. In terms of if there was any, like, what would you say worked so far? First of all, do you want to give a quick synopsis of, like, what this series is supposed to deal with or about or be, even, if you want to take a stab at that?
Defenders is stab, stab, stabby.
Thank you for acknowledging. Most people just ignore and move on.
it's trying to pull together all of the threads that came from Daredevil and what I'm assuming is Iron Fist. Mm. It's dealing with the Hand as the big bad thing of the series. And it's a full team up where you're getting Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and Daredevil and Iron Fist coming together to, like, defeat evil and save the day and save New York.
And for people that may not have any familiarity with these series, this is essentially, these stories are set in the same world as the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the Avengers, the Guardians of the Galaxy, Iron Man, Thor, Captain America. And essentially, these stories are supposed to be taking place in a world of post-Avengers, but very street level. It's supposed to be a very gritty sort of real-world crime drama with superheroes kind of a series, a universe. And the Defenders series is supposed to be the Avengers team-up of this universe, of the, you know, the TV universe, the streaming TV universe.
Yeah, yeah.
In that sense, do you find the Defenders was able to succeed in that aspect? That, yes, this is the smaller scale TV Avengers. Did you get that vibe at the end of the series?
Not really. You know, like, you, I feel like it's almost a little bit unfair to compare it to the Avengers, but the thing is, it's coming from the same universe, and you promoted this as a team-up movie, and yet that moment where, like, holy shit, they're working together, this is amazing, never really happened. It was just like, yeah, okay, these guys all seem to have all of their motivations aligned for this brief 8-episode stint.
They're all present in the same room.
Together and then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do what needs
it's
to
like
be
even,
done.
It's like even when you look at like the ending where everything was sort of done and everyone just went back their separate ways. I mean, sure, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones had a drink at a bar, great. Mm-hmm. But no one like was like, hey, we should probably keep this going. Maybe let's form like, I don't know, a committee for Hell's Kitchen, which seems to constantly be under attack in this small bubble.
Guys, let's do a book club.
Let's all meet every Tuesday.
We'll read books and center our cheese together. That's my Iron Fist, by the way.
Iron Fist is there.
Yeah, that's my Iron Fist. You're 100% right. I feel like, I mean, it's kind of like the way I kind of reacted to this is, you know how you have the reluctant hero trope? You know, wherein in the beginning, the good guy doesn't want to be involved in the main conflict. But, you know, throughout the course of the story, they get involved and they have to reluctantly save the day and become the hero. With the Defenders, it feels like everyone started off that way and remained that way throughout the end. It was kind of like, even when they were doing the thing to save the day, they were still very much like, this is so stupid. Like, I want to leave. Like, can we just leave?
Right, like, at the end, they're just like, oh, you know what? This is too much for me. I, you know... Plunging my hands in the muck was sort of a metaphor. I didn't really mean I was going to get my hands dirty. What?
Well,
what
and there was, expecting? I mean, ultimately, like, everything culminates in this one place, right? Where the evil hand is doing this crazy thing. It's located in this one spot where they all have to come back together and basically blow it up, which was the reference from earlier. And the funny part is, there's the scene, I think the last episode, I think it was, where they all have this conversation about, is it right to blow up this thing in such a public place and risk other innocents getting hurt? And there's this moral debate, and, you know, Daredevil's on the side of, we gotta do it, Luke Cage is, I'm not here to hurt people, Iron Fist is like, you know, my cartoons are on or something. And then you've got Jessica Jones, like, at one point, eventually, she raises her voice, and it felt like it was meant to be, like, you know, like the tiebreaker, right? And she was going to have like this awesome speech where it's like the most cynical person on the team is coming around, right? Like she's coming around to the way of doing things for good and justice and all that. But her speech is, can we just get this over with?
Yeah.
Like, her, that's her speech. And you're like, all right, I guess. Like she seems into it. Like.
And it just seemed like everyone's moral compass was so easily swayed. It was like Matt listens to the building and goes, oh, yeah, it's empty. Oh, okay, then. That's fine. Everything's fine. Just, you know, fucking drop a building on people. It's cool.
There's a lot of issues with the ending, but I want to talk about, like, let's talk about the characterizations because it's kind of bleeding into this conversation. We mentioned earlier that everyone's series was kind of standalone, Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, whereas Daredevil, especially with the ending of this series and the story arc that he went through with this series, the main bad guy is Elektra, which is his former lover. Did you see a point, like, of these... This didn't feel like a team-up. No one got sort of equal significance in the story, I felt. Luke Cage and Jessica Jones seemed to be just there for muscle. None of their stories, none of their drama, none of their characterizations even from their own shows had any relevance here.
None whatsoever. And like Luke Cage, you know, he came in with motivations for helping Harlem, which fine, he always has motivations for helping Harlem, but it didn't, like, at what point do you just go, okay, maybe my motivations have stopped? Like, it felt like everyone was in it for their own personal ghosts of their past, and they were just dealing with that, like Danny Rand, they were trying to deal with the Iron Fist, then you bring in Daredevil, always got to deal with Elektra, Jessica Jones dealing with the ghost of dead architect, Luke Cage dealing with, the kid from the prison cell with the sad mama.
And all those, and the thing is, though, those were relevant in episode, up to episode 2.
Yeah.
And after that point, like, Jessica Jones owes nothing to this family anymore. Like, it's done. They seem to... The mom didn't even... Like, the mom that hired her to find her husband wasn't even there in the subsequent episodes.
She was
there daughter.
For one episode.
Yeah, yeah, it was the daughter that she had to deal with and go back to. And Luke Cage, again, after that kid dies and that amazing scene by whoever that supporting actress was, which was really...
Oh, fantastic.
That was probably the most emotional part of this series, which is... Which is taking a bit away from the series, because that was just like the side extra part that had supposed to have no significance, but it was the most heartbreaking part.
Yeah. Which... No, that one, like, it struck a huge chord, and I'm like, oh man, that's rough.
Yeah.
But what other point did it have besides that? And even when you look at Jessica Jones, when she came back to the restaurant,
yeah,
she only came back because the hand was waiting outside of the wife's house. That was your string to pull on? I don't know. I felt like Daredevil and Iron Fist had decent motivations for what they had to do. It's just the other two, they just needed muscle.
To be there. Like,
yeah.
Just physically be there. Like that. And it's I mean, it's weird because usually at least the good guys and both those shows, like, even if you want to even go a step further, Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, based on what those shows did, you know, in terms of pushing this storytelling, you know, allegories and metaphors in those individual shows, you can even make a case that those shows, in what they did, were better than Daredevil. Because besides being an action kind of a series with a tortured hero, something that we've seen done a million times before, those shows did a lot more things that were unseen. So you could make the case that those two shows were a lot better than Daredevil in many respects. But none of that carries over here. And it's kind of like... So why did you bring these people together?
Yeah, like what really was the end other than you needed someone with some big biceps on one side?
Right.
It was also
which we
like...
didn't even get, by the way, because he had a hoodie on the whole time. So it's
gosh,
like you're not even exploiting the thing that you would put this guy in here to exploit.
Nope, and it wasn't until what, that very last fight where they were finally like, oh, I think I have a plan. You're not going to like it.
But even that plan, like, we're just going to hide.
Mm.
Oh, mm. Oh! I didn't see that coming.
I was expecting some intricate thing where they were gonna drop from like somewhere,
you
or
know
like
what
come
I was,
up from the shadows.
You
or...
know what I was expecting, right? I was expecting some, and this is what I was waiting for, right? I was waiting for a scene where you see the four of these people use their talents together. The comparison I can make is, for example, and the thing is, I disagree with you when you say it's unfair to compare this to the Avengers. Because of scale or budget or, you know, feature length versus television. Because the thing is, they kind of did this because of that. So you can't really not make comparisons, because the whole reason the Marvel Netflix collaboration and this concept of a shared universe that they're building themselves came from their own previous success of the Avengers team up. So, and because that's kind of the only template we have too, right? You do individual stories and then you have them all come together for one. And in the Avengers... You kind of had that. You had every hero and their powers had a specific role to play, and you see how all those people play together. This series doesn't do any of that. And even in the fight scene, which is probably the easiest place you can show that, right? You've got a brainy, you've got a guy that's indestructible, you've got a girl that's super strong, you've got a douchebag who can punch, and you've got an awesome leader in Daredevil. And so when they were like, I have a plan, you're not going to like it, I really expected some sort of like X-Men sort of Beast Wolverine cannonball situation, or sorry, Colossus and Wolverine.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, where it's like they use their power somehow together, you know, Luke Cage is indestructible, so they just drop him down or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
From the shaft, and in the confusion, they come from somewhere else. Like, something that utilizes these people's powers that we've seen. We didn't even get that.
Nope. No, it was just, they were there to fill out the rest of the Defenders and deal with their own things while Daredevil and Iron Fist did the main bulk of the story lifting.
Which, why would you give that kid anything to lift?
Jesus Christ.
Because he would probably pull something. All right, so I feel like we're shitting on this a lot.
A little bit.
Because we did open with this is decent. So is there, what would you say are the good things about the Defenders? I mean, what did they get right, if anything?
I liked some of the filming. Mm-hmm. Like those color transitions in the beginning was like a really cool way to keep track of who you were going to.
Mm-hmm.
It just made it easier, like, oh, Oh, red. Oh, switching to purple. Oh, cool. We're going to Jessica Jones. Oh, yeah. Switching to green. Oh, that's Iron Fist. All right, I get it.
I'm gonna go get a smoke now or something, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right. I'm gonna just walk away for a moment. Yeah. It'll be fine. I thought that was cool. I thought the way that they brought Luke Cage and Iron Fist together was done really well. Their meeting was great and pretty much everything that it should have been, if a little bit too soapbox preachy, but kind of necessary.
Yeah.
And Daredevil, like, as far as individual actors go, Rosario Dawson was fantastic in it. Sigourney Weaver, for what she had to do, was great.
Yes.
Charlie Cox, Krysten Ritter, Mike Coulter, they were all fantastic. I'm leaving Finn Jones out of this because
of the obvious, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, every other person in that, especially Elektra, was really good.
Yeah. She was a lot better. I feel like she was a lot better here than in season 2 of Daredevil. Mm-hmm. Even though she was here, she had, a bit less screen time than season 2 Daredevil, right?
Yeah, she was partially in season 2 Daredevil, but she was, like, sort of being slowly introduced and then ramped up. But she was always, like, it was framed, I guess, as, like, the love interest / badass.
Bad influence.
Stick ninja girl, which was fantastic. But I think at this, they gave her a lot more to do. Started her off fresh, and she had to relearn who she was and figure out how to be Black Sky and Elektra at the same time. Oh, it was great.
So much that I felt, again, and we'll come back to this when we talk about the villains, but I felt like there was a lot of potential there that, and this is another reason why I thought there was 13 episodes, James, because I'm like, we haven't come full circle. Like, I still don't know what she's doing. I feel like there's so much more to her than we've seen. So I was still under the impression that there's more. There's got to be another episode. Like, this can't be the end because we don't know what she's planning on doing.
I wish there was. Yeah. I honestly wish there was, like, at least another episode or two, because it felt like they got to 7 and went, well, let's just wrap it up in 8.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
and that will lead us back to pooping all over this series. Cause...
Yeah, so let's keep the gravy train going. Yeah. I want to say I loved Colleen Wing's story arc. I liked that she was given that importance to close up, to basically conclude the arc that she started in Iron Fist. Again, not worth seeing Iron Fist 4, but it's one of those things that I was surprised they did that. I was surprised that they carried over her arc from that show. And she was kind of given this importance that the other supporting sidekick roles didn't get.
And I mean, I was going to ask, actually, because I only saw 2 episodes of Iron Fist. And so that whole storyline threw me a little bit, because I'm like, I ended up picking up on sort of what was going on. I'm like, oh, you defeated this guy before, and they brought him back because...
Yeah, that's really the broad strokes of it. Essentially the Bakudo character... Bakudo? Bakudo? Bakudo, whatever.
Bakudo. Bakudo.
Right. The one of the five hand. So he was introduced in Iron Fist as this sensei character to Colleen Wing, who was a martial arts teacher. She had her own dojo. And he was essentially some guy who took her in. He ran a school where he took in kind of wayward street urchins and gave them purpose in life, and almost like a kind of a philanthropist or like a do-gooder, like the typical sensei tropes that you would get, but for some reason younger and, I'm assuming, Hispanic. So she looked up to him, but then he became like this sort of gray character and then ultimate antagonist by the end of Iron Fist, where it's like his school is actually a training ground for the hand, and she was recruited to be his right hand as part of the hand, but because of her innate goodness and association with Iron Fist, she was so betrayed, and she was kind of spurred him, you know, kind of, they had issues and baggage, and at the end of Iron Fist, he quote-unquote was supposed to die, but we know now that because of the hand members and the substance, which...
Right.
The MacGuffin that's never explained whatsoever.
Yeah. We'll get back to that.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. This is all part of the villains thing that I want to discuss as well. But yeah, so essentially this was about her kind of coming to terms with the person that she thought saved her life was actually this evil guy, and her kind of coming to terms. That's why throughout the series in Defenders, she's always wanting to be on the front lines. So she's very eager. She wants to kind of.
Right,
she's a great character. She's probably the best thing to come out of Iron Fist, especially because how they set up her relationship with Misty at the end. I don't know. I did a quick Google search at the end of this because I was really intrigued about what's going on. And they are a comic book duo, Misty Knight and Colleen Wing. And they have like their own miniseries from back in the day. Like, it's really cool. Apparently, they're like a whole duo. So which I'm excited for. Like, that is a spinoff of these series that I would definitely watch.
Someone give Misty that fucking Winter Soldier arm. That's what she needs.
That's what's gonna happen. No! Wikipedia that she has a bionic arm. As soon as her arm got cut off, I'm like, this is a world where people have mechanical everything. As soon as her arm got cut off, I was on Wikipedia. I'm like, Misty Knight, Wikipedia.
Who is you? Tell me everything.
Misty Knight plus Boolean search arm.
You know what? Another good thing, speaking of we're talking about supporting characters, that I did like about Defenders, and I've actually liked about every one of the Netflix Marvel series, is Claire Temple being the thread that connects everyone. I think that was a brilliant idea, starting with just this nurse in a hospital that helped Daredevil that one time, to being the nurse in the hospital that helped Jessica Jones. Oh shit, she's helping Luke Cage. Oh great, she's a part of Iron Fist in some way. I'm not 100% sure how that works. She goes to China, as far as I know.
That's how it
came together.
She's like the Claire Temple in Iron Fist, when she shows up, is ultimately the audience, because at every turn, whenever you have Iron Fist or even Colleen Wing or anyone kind of speak with a certain, you know, they're trying to sell it, right? They're trying to sell this crazy premise and this fantastical world with superpowers in the hand and all this other stuff. She is the person standing there going, what the shit? Like, what are you talking about? And she, like, and you got a glimpse of that at this, at the end, at the last episode of here too, but she's like, everything that was said in the last 2 minutes is complete insanity. That was her through all of Iron Fist. Like, you can do what? You're a who now? Right. Sure, buddy. Sure. And the best thing, and I don't want to keep rehashing the old shows, the best thing about Iron Fist at the end is Claire Temple, and this is the last episode, the last 10 minutes of the show, where Claire Temple gets this awesome dialogue, and she says to both Colleen Wing and Iron Fist, and they're having a moment, they're wrapping up the story, the series is over, and Claire Temple says to them that, you know, you guys have a lot in common. Iron Fist, Colleen Wing look at each other all romantically. They kind of smirk like, oh, yeah, I guess we do. And she's like, no, I don't mean that in a good way. You both have issues that you need to get looked at by someone. And it was like such a sobering moment for like these characters. And to me, it was like, thank you. Thank you so much for being my voice in this fictional world as I'm watching you. Rosario Dawson. You cannot beat Rosario Dawson in anything.
Very true.
I liked, what else did we like about Defenders? All right, I think that's it.
Yeah, I think we summed it up.
Yeah.
Well, without starting to get into like specific people or specific sides of this.
Yeah, it is. There's really not much to, I mean, I felt like, you know, Foggy Nelson and the character of Karen Page, as much as them being there did drive Daredevil's story forward, I didn't see a point. Like, I don't know why they were there. They didn't really contribute anything to it. There's really not much. Like you said, it's decent. It's wasted potential, ultimately.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this series could have been so much more. And the funny thing is, too, one of my complaints with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage were the fact that they were 13 episodes long. That the fact that it's like, you could have done this in 10 episodes. You didn't need that extra three, because there are a lot of parts that are kind of dragging. Whereas this series needed that. Like, you've got everyone here, including supporting characters and main characters and side roles and the story continuing from 2 years ago. You need 13 episodes. You need as much time as you can to kind of tell this story, but...
And you know what? We should set a rule. Just do it in 10. 10 episodes.
Right. That's a round number.
Seems
nice
to be
number.
Where you need to be, because 8 is too short and 13 is, at points, too long.
Yeah.
Go for 10. It'll be fine. Oh, but speaking of, like, throwaway one-off people, what the hell was Carrie Ann Moss doing in this at all?
Yeah.
you drank Jerry Hogarth out of nowhere for a line and then said, okay, thank you, have a nice day.
Peace
like,
out.
Did you spend a shit ton of money on Carrie Ann Moss? Yeah. I don't, why?
Yeah,
was it
right?
in her contract?
Like, I feel like it was. I feel like it was like, okay, we don't know what we're doing with her in like season 3 of Daredevil and going forward. So you know what? Let's just fulfill that contract obligation. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it was nice to see her, but at this point in the Defenders, at this point in this Marvel Netflix universe, like, I'm not impressed with characters just showing up, like, unless they have something to do.
Exactly, and she had nothing. She hopped in a black SUV. You know what? A phone call would have sufficed. Just call Foggy and tell him what you wanted to do. True. Like, ugh.
All right,
sorry.
So, no, it's fine, it's fine. We get emotionally invested. This is what these are for, right? You should hear me when I'm talking about other stuff, like Bollywood,
good.
Goddamn. all right, so the one thing, the last thing I'm going to talk about in terms of ragging on this show more and more and more is something that these guys fixed. This was a problem, the villain problem, as we call it, is something that the movies do. You know, there's a lot of talk about underdeveloped villains in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. All these movies, you know, what are we on, 14 now? 11? 12? What are we on?
Oh, God.
Yeah. So
14,
poorly,
I guess?
I think 14, yeah. Poorly underdeveloped villains for the last 10 years, or almost
badly.
10 years, and just terrible villains. With the Netflix Marvel Universe started, and we got Vincent D'Onofrio as Kingpin in season 1 of Daredevil, which is like, you know, mwah, perfection. Like,
far
holy
and away.
Crap.
The best thing I've ever seen.
I always say, like, when I talk about season 1 Daredevil, I'm always saying that it's less of a superhero origin and kind of a joint superhero-supervillain origin. Because
yes.
You see Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin develop through heartbreak,
yes.
Through family trauma. You get flashbacks of his life and how he became this guy. Season 2, you have another sort of started off as an antagonist and kind of became an anti-hero. In John Bernthal's Punisher.
Fantastic. Again.
Main, you know, like, brutal, foil, awesome
yep.
conflict with Daredevil for the first half. And now, I mean, he's not a hero still. He's kind of an anti-hero, maybe a little worse. But amazing. They gave that guy motivation. And that's a guy we've seen many times.
Yeah.
I would even say Thomas Jane did a really good job with that character in that movie. A lot of people say in Warzone, I forget the guy's name, Ray Stevenson? Apparently he did a really good job in Warzone. I didn't see Warzone.
Neither did I.
But yeah, I mean, there's definitive Punishers for everybody,
yep.
But unanimously, John Bernthal now is everybody's Punisher, which is, you know, kudos to him. You've got Kilgrave, Jessica Jones, another amazing
David
villain.
Tennant did a
oh
fantastic job.
And so now you're like, okay, these guys are course correcting from the feature films Marvel Universe. Then we get kind of Luke Cage, and I feel like Luke Cage is where it kind of started going downhill, because we got Cottonmouth, played
yeah.
by Oscar-winning Mahershala Ali.
Yeah.
Who
and
was,
then they jumped the shark.
Well, he was the Sigourney Weaver of that show, right?
Yeah.
He was the set up to be main antagonist, but then a red herring, because then he gets, you know, spoilers, 3, 2, 1, killed. and you make your way for Diamondback, who, what the hell?
I felt like they introduced him too late and we just sort of lost out on what that could have been.
And also the actor didn't have any sort of charisma whatsoever to play this badass.
No.
Like, I was not intimidated. I'm like, who are you? Like, leave. And then Iron Fist, you had... I can't even tell you who the antagonist Iron Fist was. I can't even think of it for the life of me.
The dragon? Was it the dragon? I hope it's the dragon.
No, it was... Well, David Wineham started off as kind of like the Cottonmouth of that show.
Yes.
Sort
yeah.
of a side antagonist. And I love that guy. Like, that actor is an amazing actor. But again, I can't think of who the antagonist in Iron Fist was. I don't think there was one. I think it was just like this group. Anyways. But yeah, since then, and now we come to the Defenders, which is supposed to be this team up, there is no antagonist. You've got Elektra, and she's not because... And again, and now we can get into it. What were her motivations? Like... What did she want to do? What did she want to accomplish? Like,
she started off with being, oh, she's reborn. She's the Black Sky. She is the Hand's number one go-getter fighter. And then she started remembering, and I'm like, oh, cool. We're going to see some inner conflict. We're going to see Elektra, like,
yeah.
try to, like, fight against the Black Skies brainwashing.
Right.
All right.
Some internal conflict, some emotional stuff. Like, this is like Elodie Young. This is your sizzle reel, you know?
Yeah. So, and we got a smidge of it. We got a hint of it where she was trying to figure out who she was, and she kept looking at the frickin' the little swords. I don't know what they're called right now. They're bugging me.
No.
Sure.
Fine, whatever. We'll Raphael's weapons, okay?
Yeah, she kept looking at those going, all right, yeah, this is me. I think this is me. And then she remembers, kills her former master.
No, James, she took a nap before.
Right,
sorry. You can't skip that. That is crucial story training. She took a nap.
She you know, worked herself into a fit, took a nap, killed her former master, killed her current master, wanted to live forever.
But did she? That seemed to be her
motivation at first.
There was this whole scene with the hand going, like, what the hell? Like, you don't understand. Like, you can't just kill people like that because we have this fragile balance. We have affiliation with politicians. We have public appearances to keep up. We're faces of multinational companies, and you can't just do things like this. Yeah. And that was so interesting to me because I'm like, oh, great. We get to see some, or maybe hear some inner workings of how the hand actually operates from the guys operating it. And then she was just like, I don't care about that stuff. Like, I'm just going to do whatever the hell I want. And it's like, but what is your plan?
Yeah. And maybe that was to the fault of it only having 8 episodes. Like, you had to rush. And that was at, like, what, the last 20 minutes of the episode that this started?
Yeah.
So Sigourney Weaver's dead. I don't give a shit about the hand. I just want what's in the cave. Okay, I got Iron Fist to open it by fighting him for a little bit and making him angry.
Oh my god, that's
so okay, scary. Now it's open. Okay, now I'm fighting still, even though the hand is telling me I don't even care anymore because the door is open, so we got what we want. What they want.
But even that, it's like, did they get to finish what they were doing? Like, I know Gao escaped.
Did she? No, because the last scene that we had with Gao was after the building started collapsing.
It was
her face looking up. She was talking to, what's his nuts?
Japano guy. I don't even know.
Yeah. Murakami.
Right.
First off, the introduction of Murakami.
So good.
Holy God.
It. Yeah, that was wicked.
The way that was shot at a kitchen sink where this guy's like killing an endangered, or not killing,
he's
gutting
skinning.
An endangered
bear. Yeah, basically.
Was brilliant, and the fact that he only ever spoke Japanese was fantastic.
Especially because, and everyone responded to him in English, and he responded in Japanese.
Yeah, which reminds me of something completely different, but neither here nor there right now.
Why? What does that remind you of? You gotta tell me.
I was watching the honest trailers for Ghost in the Shell, and like the main... only Japanese guy in there refused to speak English, and they were like, well, it's like he knew this was gonna be shit, so he only spoke Japanese.
I am not letting you whitewash me too, okay?
I am not speaking English for this. I'm not learning these phrases in English for this garbage that you're filming. But anyway, so Murakami,
nice.
I thought it was more like sinister in the fact that he was only speaking Japanese.
Yeah, dude.
But then he died like a bitch. He died like a bitch.
Yo, he got thrown off. Like, this is, and the thing is too, they hype him up so much, right? They're like, this is the guy who kind of pulled the strings of Nobu. Which, by the way, the Nobu Daredevil fight in season one, on top of all the amazing things already in season one, was one of the best fight scenes of this entire universe. Arguably anything on TV. But so this guy, you're like, oh shit, Nobu was this guy, was working for this guy? So this guy must be so much more badass. Nothing.
I didn't even see him get like impaled. It was just all of a sudden
he
cut
fell.
To
yeah.
Murakami is impaled on this steel rod.
Yeah.
When did that happen? Did I miss something? Like,
no, he just fell, bro. He's fell. It's a construction site, right? There's you know, foundation rods everywhere that you just get impaled on like that. You don't know?
Sure. Yeah. They just leave them all willy-nilly pointing straight up.
Yeah.
And it's just like, then Madame Gao, back to Madame Gao, she was just looking up and then the building fell on her. So as far as I'm concerned...
I feel like that's pretty ambiguous. I feel like she will come back. Especially because for an old lady, she survived a lot of these shows. Like, she was in season 1, season 2, she was in Iron Fist. Like, dude, she's got something. She's gonna come back. I'm telling you, she'll be the only Soul Surviving member with a hand at this point, right?
She got one of those like pieces of bone marrow out, and she's back.
I'd be so funny if they just recast her in season 3. Like, this is the younger Madame Gao, who's like super badass now.
Reborn into the body of bad villain number three,
Maggie
who
Q.
died.
Yeah. Maggie Q. Like the only other Asian that they know, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, dude, I don't. Yeah, see, even the hand at the end of it all, like, there's such a good backstory to this, which we didn't see in Iron Fist. That the hand is, and why wouldn't you reveal that in Iron Fist? Why wouldn't you give us that story beat that the hand are former members and inhabitants of Kun Lun? Like, that's always such a good story when you have insiders betray the cause and go rogue and stuff, right?
Yeah, and you know what? That's interesting because I thought that was already revealed in Iron Fist, and that it was just being rehashed for the folks that maybe didn't see Iron Fist.
Nope.
But if you're telling me that it wasn't, that seems like a really odd choice of story. Like, why?
Yeah, I can't. Well, okay. So here's the other thing too that's very odd. So do you remember the scene where Murakami was introduced, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we got all the members of the Hand almost, right? First of all, it's finally revealed that Gao is a founding member of the Hand, which was a shocker. Honestly, that was a
Yeah.
And then Sigourney Weaver was the leader. Great, she's new. No one cares. Because that was an interesting part, right? That you thought Gao was in charge of all these things. But then you find out that Gao's working for Weaver, and then you're like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I want to know more.
Yeah.
And then you meet Murakami, and his reaction is, in the scene, he says that, oh, are we all together? And she's like, yeah. And he specifically mentions, what about the other one? Right? He doesn't say the person's by name. And so I also thought, my first reaction was, oh, they're setting up something else. Like, this whoever this other one is going to be like a badass mother, right?
Yeah.
But then when you have the restaurant scene in the Defenders, like, you know, when they all meet up and they're hiding out and Stick comes and kind of gives them the rundown of what's going on. Stick mentions everyone by name. He runs down Gao. He runs down Weaver. He runs down Murakami. And who is the... Oh, and then...
Bakudo.
And then, no, the other guy, the warlord.
That's Sawandi?
Sawandi. So he runs down them. And then they say, oh, and then... Well, one of them's dead. And this is the guy that they kill at the end of Iron Fist. So we're supposed to put together that, oh, wait, so Bakudo was a member of the Hand? But he died so easily at the end of at the end of Iron Fist. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of setup that you... Kind of that thing, that mystery you set up with Murakami going, oh, what about the other one? And she's like, oh, he'll be here. He's coming from South America or whatever. But then you reveal to us, again, in dialogue, that, oh, that other one that was ominously referred to is just the guy that we've already seen.
Yeah,
and it's like,
yeah.
I don't... What was the point of that?
Yeah, like, I thought there was going to be a bigger payoff, too.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be someone crazy. Like, they're bringing out...
big guy or some crazy, psychotic, Viking-looking, you know... Something wicked.
Yeah.
Like, something Nobu style, but, oh, this guy's going to be like a juggernaut kind of a thing.
Yeah,
and it's like,
yeah.
Oh, no, that guy died. Remember that guy? Remember that Hispanic pretty boy in the Iron Fist?
He died.
He didn't die, so he's back.
We brought him back.
And it's
okay.
Like, you just revealed that in dialogue, not even like, you didn't show us anything. Like, it wasn't a reveal where he turns a corner and it's like, oh, but I thought he was dead. And it's like, nope, you just told us.
Yeah.
Like,
We all know now.
Yeah. Like, we've put it together. So, yeah. All right. So, I think we're at the end of bitching about the Defenders. At the end of the day, though, still, again, like, I feel like we're being really hard because it was... It's only problematic once you start picking at it.
Mm-hmm.
For what the series is, you can watch this and go, it's engaging, it's you know, the action flows, but I feel like Netflix and Marvel set the bar so high.
Way too high.
With action scenes like Daredevil, with story beats like Jessica Jones, with, you know, innovative concepts and ideas like Luke Cage, that now you just gave us a run-of-the-mill sort of dramatic TV series, which... maybe good on its own, but not after I've seen all these other things. Like, I'm looking for that level of quality storytelling. Like you mentioned, I think, off the air when we were talking earlier, that episode one has so many Dutch angles.
Oh my god, so many. I literally wrote that in my talking points, was so dot many dot Dutch dot angles. Like, who films like that anymore?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like... Where is this? Why is everyone talking weirdly sideways?
Yeah.
do I need to turn with the TV today?
Is this from someone's perspective who's on the floor?
Yeah, like, why? Why is everything angled? Which, okay, fine. It sort of, as the season progressed, it got less and less. Yeah. It was just really the beginning that was really jarring at first.
There was a lot of, in the fight scenes near the end, there was a lot of those. Those came back, and I was just like, ugh. You know what it is, James, again. Right? You know what it is, right? Mike Coulter is too big to fit in the frame. That's why. They have to just kind of angle it a little bit. All right, so despite our bitching, we know that these series will continue. Daredevil 3 is going to happen. Yes. Jessica Jones Season 2 is filming, I believe, right now. Iron Fist Season 2 has been approved because someone's asleep at the wheel. Now, at this point, what do you expect going forward? How do you think these guys can course correct what we just saw and what's happened in the Defenders? Not from a story beat point of view, but more from a storytelling perspective. Like, from behind the scenes, what do you think, in your opinion, they could do to kind of bring this back to that level of quality that we wanted?
Well, I think for Daredevil, especially with the setup that they're trying to pull off, I had to do some reading into it because, honestly, like, I'm a little bit uneducated in the sense of this side of the comic world. Like, this, for, like, besides Daredevil, that Ben Affleck vehicle from way back when, or well, that's really it out of the four of them. I've never had much of an interaction with these characters whatsoever. So I had to do a little bit of reading on what that final sort of Daredevil bit was in Defenders. And I'm intrigued. Like, I really want it to go somewhere good, but I think they have to go back to those Daredevil sort of roots. And I don't know who's running season three for Daredevil, but they have to go with that style of fleshing out a really good villain and giving Matt something to do other than just kick butt. Like, he has to have some type of struggle going for him or trying to figure out who he is. Well, that's been going on for the last few seasons now, is who Matt is, which I think it finally came to a head in Defenders. So I think now they're going to go whole hog into Daredevil just being Daredevil and saving his city. But, like, I really want them to get back to that, having a decent villain, not having something that feels rushed at the end, like they needed to conclude something. And we don't need to do the whole bait and switch on the villains, guys.
Yeah.
You can just have one good villain. Wilson Fisk showed that. Like, you can have one villain for the whole season, Killgrave, and it would be incredible. Killgrave, like, another great example.
And those two villains are, like, complete ends of the spectrum, right? You've got Wilson Fisk, who is real, like a human being, person. No powers, no fantastical elements, no science fiction. Just a character doing real-life things in the real world. And then on the other end, you've got Killgrave, a guy with powers, which is disturbing and odd to get used to. He's not the typical kind of guy, and you really need to suspend your disbelief to kind of get into that story, but it worked. Both ends of the spectrum work. You don't need to find an in-between.
Exactly, and that's what I want to see going forward. I don't want this sort of, oh, here's this villain, yeah, don't worry about it. Like what Luke Cage did, like, here's this great villain, we got Mahershala Ali to play this great villain. Yeah, but don't invest too much into him. Just let that, you know, just be.
Yeah.
And I want to see something head towards, I don't know, maybe another team up that has more motivations for everyone other than just two of them. And it's going to be interesting
to
see
coupling.
Where
it's not a team up, it's just a coupling.
Yeah, this is just two with a couple tag-alongs. And I want to see what happens now that, you know, Stick's gone. Stick was always sort of like this catalyst for events to happen for Daredevil. Yeah. He's not there. What are you going to do? Yeah. Who's going to push this forward? And also, Elektra, are you dead? Are you alive?
I think I'm done with Elektra. I mean, unless she comes back as a full-fledged, I mean, kind of what they do on Arrow, and not to bring up Arrow, but unless she comes back and she is a full-functioning member, like, I mean, let's give Matt something else, right? Let's give him a happy relationship this time around, right? Let him and Elektra be together, and let's see what conflict arises out of that, right? Like, in terms of himself and his getting to know himself in a relationship where he's happy. And, hey, even go with the soap opera drama that's going to come from Karen Page and him if he's in a relationship with, you know, the girl that tried to kill everyone. But in terms of, for me, I don't even want to see a Defenders season two, to be completely honest, because I find this universe works a lot better when you have characters showing up.
Sure.
Like the way Luke Cage showed up in Jessica Jones, and I thought that was fine. I didn't think that was a backdoor. Like, yeah, give me more about this guy, but now let him show up somewhere else. Let Jessica Jones show up in his series. Let Iron Fist stay with Luke Cage. I don't need another Iron Fist either. Like, I don't need to see these stories of some of these characters on their own. Like, I'm okay with, like Claire Temple. She showed up in everything, and it was organic. It was interesting. It never felt forced. Felt like she had reason to be there. And it's not, and again, like when you, in terms of comparison with the MCU, this is not the MCU. You can have these actors show up on other shows, and it's not crazy budget, and it's not like it's beneath them or anything like that. You know, like, I would just prefer at this point a series with Luke Cage and Iron Fist. Because also, with Luke Cage, what other stories are you going to tell in season two? Like,
true.
What other sort of race relations stories, what other sort of, you know, gritty crime real world allegories are you really going to give? Like, I feel like you did all that. Now, kind of have that. I like the dynamic in the beginning of Defenders with Luke Cage and Iron Fist.
For sure.
I didn't see it throughout the series after that. Like, I loved the scene where Luke Cage has to explain white privilege to Danny Rand. I thought that was one of the highlights of this show. And I think that reason alone makes them a great pair. And even in the comic books, it's Power Man and Iron Fist. Like, these are the two characters that in the comic books have always been paired up together. They're the heroes for hire. So give them their own show. Like, I don't need to see Iron Fist on his own. And even Luke Cage, I like the guy. I just don't know what you do with him in the season two.
No one really knows where that's supposed to go. But yeah. I think you're right. Like, smaller team-ups would be super cool and could take it in a really interesting direction.
Like, I would love, like, I like the chemistry between, Jessica Jones and Daredevil. And I would love to see her in his world. And see, and I mean, if for nothing else, but for comic relief. Because I would love her reactions to the shit that he goes through. I think
for
that
sure.
would be, like, he's always so overdramatic. And I want to kind of have her be there for him dealing with his baggage and, you know, have her just mock him for it or just make light of it. Because it's like, oh my God, like, you're such a, you know, melodramatic person. Like, get over it, right?
Yeah.
And give me that. Like, I really don't. I mean, Jessica Jones, yeah, I do want to see a season two with her because I think whoever the showrunners are for that show, I forget her name. Jessica Jones season one is amazing. I do want to see that continue because I think there's more to say and do there.
For sure.
Especially with a woman, like a female-centric show. Like, you can't have enough of that. But yeah, dude, I honestly don't want to see season two of Defenders at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it would take a lot. And yeah. It would have to be something that's really compelling for all of them to get me to watch it again. Not that I hate Defenders. I find it's very watchable. It just falls
very
apart
watchable.
At the end.
Yeah.
But I think you're right with Jessica Jones, though. Like, she's sort of the one that, and maybe it's just the way that the narrative style is, because it's like this film noir comic book detective story. And it's like you could get into like really interesting self-contained stories that are all about like the investigative work, but also kicking butt at the same time.
Yeah.
Or you could do something that's more like, yeah, David Tennant, like, something creepy and sinister overbearing the whole thing. But you could just literally do a 10 episode series that's done like a detective procedural from like the 50s. Like, it could be like a complete noir, and it
like
would
a
be
neo
perfect.
Noir kind of like that sounds, I would love that, like that. I mean, and season was kind of that to a point. You know, in the beginning with the nice, you know, slow crawl of her drunk at her desk with like the knocked over liquor bottle.
Yeah.
And I mean, let's get more of that. Like, let's, and you know what? Let's add, you know, Misty and Colleen into the mix. Like, you know, have them be their own detective duo and have them come to heads. You know, like let me see these characters in each other's worlds now that we've established that they all know each other, right? Like, I don't mean like a Carrie Ann Moss type of cameo. I'm talking about like, let them get involved in each other's worlds. Like, let them do things and play in their sandboxes and leave it at that. Like, I don't need to see them all together at the same place.
Yeah, and I think the only thing that I want to sort of see that I haven't yet, that we haven't gotten enough of yet, is I want John Bernthal's Punisher to just be fantastic.
I forgot about him, yeah. So, and dude, awesome segue. Look at this guy. So wrapping it up, I want to just, I mean, we've reviewed the Defenders. We liked it, but also not. Substantially, it needs work. First glance, not too bad. So moving on, let's wrap it up and let's talk about the post-credit scene we got at the end of Defenders, which promises I don't want to say better things to come, but essentially better things to come with the spinoff. And this was the unplanned spinoff, right? This was the movie. This was the show that they hadn't originally planned for. This was solely because of Jon Bernthal. He was so good in season two of Daredevil that they're like, this guy needs his own goddamn show. And the character The Punisher fits this world so beautifully that he is now getting his own Netflix Marvel series. I believe it's coming out, I want to say end of this year? November?
Is it set for that? Handy dandy Google to the rescue.
Both scrambling with the keyboards.
2017. So end of this year.
I'm sure. No, I think it was supposed to come out, I think, like December, and they moved it up to either October or November, which makes sense because a lot of the Netflix stuff came out in September too. Some of these other series, they debuted like end of September, like right when the school year, like the fall season started, right?
Yes.
So that makes sense. So yeah, so we got a post credits teaser at the end of Defenders for the Punisher. Punisher's had some other teasers before as well, but this was, I think, after they kind of shot, I think they're done, and this was like the first finished trailer I think we got. What did you think about this Punisher teaser?
Oh man, not nearly enough. It was a minute of, you know, slamming a hammer into some concrete and seeing some brief flashes, but man, do I want more. I want more so badly. Mm-hmm. He was the best aspect of, maybe not the best, but one of the best aspects of Daredevil season two. I feel like I got ahead of myself there. But it just, the way that he came in, the way that he portrayed this character and brought it to life, and it was just like, holy God, no one's been able to pull this off the same way before, to the same level that it's at. And I just want so much more. I want it all in my face right now. Like, I need this.
You're getting very graphic here. This is a family show, James.
I completely agree.
And, like, my only concern with The Punisher, and it's not really a concern, my only concern is the fact that this wasn't planned. And based on the entire DC Extended Universe, when makers do things out of reaction, like, this was good, we should do more, and it's not part of their original plan, I'm always kind of cautious about how it's going to turn out. I don't have any doubts in Jon Bernthal. And even the showrunner, Steve Lightfoot, of the creator of the Punisher series for Marvel and Netflix, he's a guy that, I haven't seen it, but apparently he was an EP on Hannibal. He did a bunch of stuff with, Steve Lightfoot. Yeah, he was an EP on Hannibal. He did Narcos. He was a consulting producer for a bit on Narcos. So he has some pedigree. So I'm not saying it's
going to
be bad. Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, I'm just kind of worried that how is he going to fit into the rest of it? But based on what I just told you about the Defenders, if they don't fit, I don't care. Like,
yeah,
it's okay. Right?
I would be more okay if they branched away from the Defenders and went more into like the Guns for Hire sort of thing.
Yes.
Like, that would be fine, because then you could use the Punisher in a different way, and I think he would play off pretty well.
And the thing
also,
is, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, the only thing I was going to say is, like, composer has been listed as Tyler Bates. Man, sign me up.
Oh,
I love Tyler Bates as a composer.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, right?
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's cool. I mean, you know what? And the thing is, too, if you look back at all these characters, Luke Cage is from the comic books Heroes for Hire, where he's literally a hero that you pay, like the opposite of a mercenary. You've got, you know, Jessica Jones, who is a private investigator, again, for hire. Iron Fist usually works with Luke Cage in the comic books for his Heroes for Hire business. You've got Punisher, who's essentially a mercenary. Like, give me a show, and the thing is, because you have these neo-noir roots with Jessica Jones, give me a show where someone hires these guys. You know, have that be the catalyst that brings them come together. And then they get double-crossed or something. So they're all invested in what just happened. Like, they, you know, their skills are individually hired for by the same client. They come together. They realize they're being double-crossed. Boom. Story. Like, something that makes sense. And not, we're in a building at the same time. I guess we're friends now. And it's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
All right. Well, James, thank you so much for taking the time. This was very impromptu. This was very last minute. Thank you so much for making the time and coming on the show. Why don't you let people know, if you have an online presence, where they can get in touch with you and disagree with you about Jessica Jones?
Well, first off, thank you so much for letting me jump in on this. This was a lot of fun. I would love to discuss comic books and Netflix related Marvel drama in the future anytime you want.
All right.
If you want to find me, What?
Sorry, I'm going to cut you off because I do this a lot. I get people, I put the spotlight on people on air so they can't back out of commitments. So since you mentioned that, how about I book you right now for the Punisher review when that comes out in November?
Done. I'm in.
There you go. See, then I have it on record, and then people, yeah. I can kind of humiliate people. Like, you said on air, hundreds, like three, people listened.
It's November. Look at your calendar.
Why didn't you accept my Apple iCal alert? But yeah, sorry. You were telling people where they can get a hold of you.
Yeah, if you want to get a hold of me for any reason or anything at all, really my handle is the same across every single social media, so you can find me very, very easily. Jamatuzzi, Jamatuzzi. That's it. Easy, simple, and fun.
Yes, short and sweet. Not that I'm saying you're sweet, you're cool, bro. All right, well, again, thank you so much, James, for being here. This was another episode of the Split Screen Podcast where we reviewed The Defenders. For more episodes like this and other episodes and shows featuring remakes of Bollywood movies or other movies in general, subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, is what it is now. It's not iTunes anymore. Stitcher, Google Play Music, or any other preferred podcasting app. You can visit my website directly at www.blankpagebeatdown.com, and you can listen to the show directly on your browser if you don't have a podcasting app. Follow the podcast on Twitter at splitscreen_pod. Follow me directly on Twitter. I promise I won't block you unless you spam me with porn, at the Shah Shahid. And if you liked what you heard today and you want to hear more stuff like this, show me some love. Leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find the show. Lets me know what I can improve on. Leave me honest feedback. And if you also want to be a guest on the show, like the lucky James here, get in touch with me, like I said, anywhere on Twitter, at the podcast, Twitter, anywhere else. And thank you so much for listening. And until next time, my name is Shah Shahid. And have yourself a great night.